Welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin, your host. True Wealth is brought to you by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington, 99207, 3201 North Division Street, inside the Division Hill Clock Tower Plaza. Been in business a little over 20 years. Built the building about 12 years ago. One of the nicer facilities in the United States. We are a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. That means that we deal in all forms of precious metals at all times. There's no exceptions. I've mentioned people call and say, are you buying today? We've never stopped, and we're always selling. We're always buying. We carry a pretty substantial inventory for anybody who's ever been around this industry, and what's available out there, we definitely carry a very profound inventory. We are relatively knowledgeable, I think is probably putting it lightly. The reason I say that, there are so many companies out there that advertise all over the place. And what they do is they just get literal solicitors and they drop them in the saddle and they just start, as I call it, smiling and dialing. They get named from different leads. By the way, some of you probably get calls regularly from some of these organizations and you wonder where they got your name. At some point in time, you called them or you gave your name to somebody. Tell them to stop calling you. I promise you, if you are being pursued by a solicitor to buy anything to do with gold or coins, I guarantee you 100% without fail, anything that they would sell you would be drastically overpriced. How do I know that? I know that because the margins in this business are painfully small, okay? Literally, gold, 2%. Silver, 3 to 4%. Rare coins, up to 10%, sometimes less. Literally, I'd say 0 to 10%. How can we do it at zero? The way that I can sell rare coins at 0% sometimes is if I've had them in inventory a number of years and I will just sell them to the client at a wholesale price at our current daily buy price. That means if you buy them from us and sit on them a few years and come back, you whatever they've gone up or down will exactly start at the market without any margin to absorb. So the margins are just painful. And the thing is, that might not sound, it might not make a lot of sense, but if you think about it, even if you get into a situation where someone invests $50,000, if the company is making, you know, well, if we are making, say, an average of 3% or whatever, say 4, that's $2,000. Okay, if a big company that's marketing, I say big because they actually, they give you that perception. We do far more volume than any of them. But they pay their solicitors a third of the profit, okay? So the problem is these people get products to focus on that are super high margin. They used to pump like, you know, Swiss 20 francs, and they'd say, oh, they're non-confiscatable, you know, because they're dated before 1933. Totally not true. Foreign gold during the confiscation was the first thing to go, okay? Foreign gold was not sacred at all. In fact, in this nation, we used to respect America and American-made everything. We were much more isolationist. I think FDR probably was the first person, being a socialist, who brought us onto the grand global scale and started to integrate us into the whole world scenario. He was a hardcore radical socialist, changed the direction of this nation, and we are literally paying for it today. Folks, in Coins Plus is 444-0044, locally outside toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. We do specialize in wealth and capital preservation, as many of you know. We will build you a wonderful portfolio. They last. They're good. They're solid. They're timeless. You don't have to worry about radical, stupid movements in them. They're based on true wealth, real money, biblically created by God, endorsed, authorized, and ordained biblically. There is no question about it. Think about the fact that, you know, I've gone through the fact that in Genesis 2, Genesis 1, God creates it all. Genesis 2, he tells you where to get gold. He uses the highest complimentary ancient Hebrew rabbinical word there is, tav, to describe it, which is the greatest good of all. The greatest good is the word he uses. He goes on. He teaches us in the Bible about economics, which begin. His patriarchs become blessed with it. You know, it's just a huge component of our existence. This is nothing. It's not random. It's not accidental. You know, the love of money is the root of all evil. He teaches us that doesn't mean that we're not supposed to deal with it. We've got to be good stewards. I have talked to people too much, folks, where they are not taking responsibility for their personal finances. If you owe debt, even if it's painful, you got to fight through it. If you can't pay it legitimately, you don't have a job and you're, you know, I'm going to tell you, if you were an engineer and you were making 60 grand a year or a computer programmer, whatever it is, and you lost your job and you can't quote unquote find a job like that, there's really no reason you shouldn't be able to. But if you can't, you get employment where and how you can. You just work. If you really believe in God and you think he's real and you believe his word is true, where he says that if you're faithful with little, he'll give you much, and that, you know, that he knows your heart, you've got to work. You've got to show him you're willing to do what it takes. I know so many people that have worked their way from street sweeper to CEO or to high-level executive management in corporations. It's not even funny. If companies can recognize it and honor it, can't God? And so you need to be that way. And I'll also tell you, my daughter she's taking a break, but she, you know, was a human resources specialist for a very large engineering firm, an international engineering firm with many, many thousands and thousands of employees. She hired people, and of course the alternative as well. But the thing is, the thing she told me all the time, she's like, Dad, you should see how foolishly dumb these people are in their interviews, the things they say. If you can't get a job, folks, first of all, don't have a beat up self-esteem. Be prideful in a good way, not unbiblically. But when you go into an interview, speak with honor and dignity. Don't have this attitude. I have had people come into interview with me. They know we're Christian, and I have to ask, what are one of your weaknesses? I've had guys sit in front of me. This happened. I asked a guy, I said, so what are your weaknesses or whatever? And he goes, well, I'll be honest with you, I'm addicted to pornography. It's like, okay, thanks. Great. Good. You know, brilliant, right? I mean, you're sitting there like, are you a fool? Now, granted, that was the end of that interview. But, I mean, be smarter than that. Be wise. Read Proverbs. Folks, if you aren't reading Proverbs on a daily basis and digging deep into it and turning it onto yourself and looking, folks, God gave us a wonderful imagination, the ability to visualize. Why would he do that? Because we have to visualize everything we create before we create it. We have to visualize everything we do before we do it. We don't even realize we do it. We visualize before we walk down the aisle and pick up a loaf of bread. We do it. God gave us that ability. I don't understand why, but I kind of do, because it works real well. So you've got to visualize yourself the way you want to be. You've got to visualize the person that you want to be for God. It's almost like an alternative paradigm. Like, you know, people say parallel universes. I'm not going to get weird on you, but you've kind of got your dark side and your light side. You know, if you think in the light, God tells us, focus on everything that's good and beautiful and wonderful and terrific and fantastic. And throughout the Bible, he tells us to have a positive mental attitude, doesn't he? I mean, you know, when you get like the Anthony Robbins and these kind of guys that come out and they're pumping positive mental attitude, and we're like, oh, that's secular humanism, you know. I prefer to read the Bible. Great, read the Bible, but God tells you to be positive mental attitude. And boy, does it make a difference. You've got to believe in yourself. You've got to believe you can do whatever you set your mind out to be. And again, I've seen people take that too far. You know, I've seen people say, okay, well, I've literally seen people say, well, if I can do whatever I set my mind to, I'm going to set my mind to something that's undoable. That's also a form of self-sabotage. Don't self-sabotage yourself, but visualize yourself doing things for God that are doable. Being the person that you know He wants you to be. And worst of all, least of all, folks, don't justify. Don't justify your weakness and your sin. Pay attention to how others perceive you. Very important. Because you've got to be, what's the Bible say? Count others better than yourselves. Why does it say that? Because we have a tendency to be severely self-focused. Think of the fact where Jesus says, you know, love your neighbor what? As yourself, right? Okay, so let's create a scale of narcissism from 0 to 10. If somebody like Jesus is a 0 on the narcissist scale, he does not have any false pride or love for himself. For him to love his neighbor as himself really is a lower calling, and don't get me wrong, I shouldn't use Jesus as an example, but the point is this, the point is, the more obsessed you are with yourself, the more self-absorbed you are, the higher the calling is to love your neighbor as yourself. If you, all you do is focus on yourself, think about yourself, you know, enlighten yourself or stimulate your nerve endings or just, you know, that you just feed your fleshly needs in lieu of everybody around you. Now, God says, okay, great, now go do that for someone else. You're like, wait a minute, that's like undoable. Well, then you love yourself too much. So take it back, step back. We're supposed to be empty vessels. I used to always hear, the best medicine for depression is to go help somebody. I used to hear that before I was a believer. And you know what? It was true. I would get off my duff and I would go out and I'd help somebody or do something good. And you know what? Bingo, the depression would be gone. Or another exercise I mentioned a while ago, just start writing a list of every single thing you're thankful for, as dumb as it may be. Just every single possible thing you're thankful for. When you get into that groove, you cannot be depressed anymore. You just can't. Your brain gets into a direction or into a mode or groove, and you cannot go both ways. You can be worried about something, you know, and I'll tell you what, as you become more mature, God gives you more responsibility. He who is faithful with little will be given much. We just had an issue where, I don't know, I dealt with this guy that a mutual friend referred this guy, I think I talked about, who ended up being a pedophile, convicted, you know, real sick, sad situation. And his thing was, he said, worry means that we're taking on more responsibility than God intended us to have. I don't completely agree. Be anxious about nothing, but in everything, through prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds in Jesus Christ. I get that. But as you take on more and more responsibility, you know, there becomes a general concern, okay? So say I've got people under my authority that I care about, and I do. My people, I care about. If they're going through something, I guess I got a little bit of mother in me. I care. I worry a little bit, right? I mean, you're just going to be generally concerned. I get concerned about the well-being of children in this world. I get concerned, you know, about things being done right. I get concerned about the shooting today, and I'll tell you about that here in a minute. But I mean, we God's telling us to trust Him, put our faith in Him. It doesn't always mean that you're not going to worry, because how do you have to have no anxiety? Well, first you got to get anxiety. Then you pray and give it to Him. If you don't have any anxiety, you're not handing it off to Him. They wouldn't say, be anxious about nothing if we were already anxious about nothing. So we're going to have general concerns. And I believe as we grow in responsibility, I always think of when you're a child and you start to mature and all of a sudden you got to start, you know, go down and take your driver's test and go do this. And you know, you're going to school and you got to pass this grade and you got, and the pressure just kind of mounts and builds and mounts and builds, but we get used to it. And that's good. We need that because as we develop into stronger human beings, we take on more responsibility. Eventually you're going to be a parent. You're going to have to take care of the house. You're going to have to handle the bills. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to do a good job at work. Sometimes things at work are going to be disconcerting. You know, and we take on more and more responsibility. If you're really good, you start to get promoted. People see it and they say, you know what? That person has a great spirit. And I'm telling you, folks, wherever you work, I am encouraging you. Walk the high road. People say, I work as under the Lord. I believe we should. But then you watch the things they do when people, they consider it a mistreatment or the way they lash back and they respond immediately. They never think long term. They're not working as under the Lord. You need to work as under the Lord. What that means is that wherever you work, God is your boss. Jesus Christ is your boss. He's watching you all the time. And I think one of the biggest weaknesses in Christians is a real lack of faith. I think that people say they're believers and then they live their lives completely for themselves. They're not looking for God's involvement in everything. They don't believe that he's there. They think that he's a cliche somewhere out in outer space that you pray to send out little magical dust every once in a while to help to lend a helping hand. God's either omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent, or he's not. I don't want to worship a God who isn't, you know, all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-present, period. I don't want a wandering God, and God is not a wandering God. He's everywhere at all times, so you've got to lay your lives in the hands of that God. You either believe or you don't. If you believe, then live it. Believe it. Live like you do. As you work under the Lord, everything, you assume he's there all the time. He watches everything you do. You assume his word is good, that he will reward the righteous. Now, that doesn't mean on your time scale and on your economic measures and, you know, you don't get to give him the ledger and say, Lord, I did this and you owe me this. It doesn't work like that. One of the things that sickens me the most is people who give and they say, I sowed $40 into this man's ministry, so I know that God is bringing me a special blessing. That's barf. That is not, you have, when it says give with a cheerful heart, it means give with a cheerful heart. Give to release with no conditions or stipulations whatsoever is what that word means. To give is to give. Now, I'll admit something. My wife and I have probably gone over the edge on generosity for many years. And I've been foolish at times. I've given in a lot of situations where I shouldn't to people that were taking advantage of me and everything. And the only reason I'm telling you that is there is a wisdom. It always comes back to accountability, to stewardship, okay? You've got to be wise in what you're doing with the money God gave you. That is the entire point of, it's supposed to be the point of the show, but is pure stewardship, absolute self-control, one of the greatest fruits of the Spirit, wisdom and self-control. My son asked me the other day about a good friend I've had forever. He said, is he smart? I said, you know, he's not deep and analytical, but when it comes down to practicality, he's brilliant. He's a kid I grew up with. He's been my friend since, you know, forever. His dad was a banker. They're very pragmatic. He's always made very wise decisions financially and in his lifestyle and everything, but he's not deeply analytical at all. But he is wise. And literally, if I gave the guy an IQ test, he probably wouldn't do that good. But he's still wise. You can be wise without being a rocket scientist or a genius. That's the cool thing about the Bible. The Bible is basically, the point of wisdom is you either learn from God's word and trust it and believe it, or you learn from ignorance and trial and error, and there's no way that you can make every possible mistake. There's no way. You'll ruin your life, you know, and you've got to get to the point where you just do the right thing because it's the right thing. Problem is, when you do the wrong thing, then you get to see how stupid it was because you get all the consequences. When you do the right thing, your life is peaceful. That's the goal, is peace and you know, prosperity and comfort and tranquility. No matter what you do, if that's what God says he'll give us, is peace. Part of that is just by obeying him, we avoid all these stupid problems. I had an employee one time who literally did some of the craziest things you can imagine, just absolute reckless mayhem. And I'm like, why are you doing this? And she said to me, and this was the weirdest thing, she said, I learn from making mistakes. And I said, you mean you learn from your mistakes? She said, no, I learn by making mistakes. So we went back and forth over the vernacular because she was Russian. And she meant it. She meant that I intentionally do things wrong. I won't ask questions. I won't, because then if I do it wrong and then I find out what I did wrong, then all of a sudden I learn how to do it right. She literally believed this. So she literally would go out and do things wrong, because then when the consequences hit, she felt that it shocked her into reality. That is not the way we're supposed to live our lives at all, folks. We're supposed to be committed to God into wisdom. And we've got to realize the Bible does want us to control our thoughts. You know how, like in Philippians, it says, if there's any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection or sympathy, complete my joy by being of that same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Then he goes on, do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interests of others. Have this in mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, and on. You know, you've got to put other people first. What, you know, what movie do you want to watch? What do you want for dinner? Where would you like to go? What would you like to do? You know, how are you feeling today? What do you think about that? That's what we have to get into, asking more questions. Curiosity. Develop a curiosity for other people. It's interesting, folks. We already know all about ourselves. Why do we want to obsess on ourselves? Unless you're one of these that is like, I'm finding myself. I'm searching for truth. You know, there's scriptures about those, you know, constant seekers of the truth. They never find it because it's the journey. And then you bring them the truth and go, oh, that's easy. It's Jesus Christ. Oh, well, that's one of the interesting perspectives, but I want to continue upon my journey seeking truth. Folks, bleh, okay? Here's the thing. We're on this earth by God, for God, because of God, whatever you want to say. Here's how it works. Simple. God put us here for the purpose of our free will to choose him for eternity, okay? Now, that is pure truth. That is the truth. We serve the God of the Bible, the God of truth. Now, once we discover that, life's different. If we waste our time searching for truth and searching and searching and searching, we waste our whole lives. We're grounded in nothing. We stand for nothing. We do nothing for the right purposes. You know, I watched this other weekend, Katy Perry rented a vacant home. And most of you probably don't know who she is, and I hardly do either. She's some pop singer. She rented a vacant home, and then she spent the weekend apologizing for all of her cultural misappropriations over the years. And she said that it made her feel so bad. And she was wearing some weird, like, Hare Krishna outfit. And but see, you know, she's so spiritually deep now that everybody looks to her and goes, wow, what a deeply spiritual person. No, and so what she's saying is, I've eaten watermelon in my videos, and that is offensive to the black people. And I've did this dance, which is offensive to the Brazilians, because it's not mine to do, it's theirs. And, you know, and then in 6 years, she'll be on another tangent. when you know Jesus Christ, the God of the Bible, you've pounded your stake in the ground, you've got the truth, you know the end game. That's the whole goal, isn't it? To know the end game. Isn't that what everybody ultimately wants to know? Is there life after death? What happens when I die? Why am I here? What's my purpose? You know, many believers, I don't think even believe when someone says, hey, you have a destiny. And God has you here for a specific purpose. They go, well, here's what I used to struggle with. I'd be like, dude, there's like 7 billion people here. How can I be significant? Well, God, you know, every one of us leaves a footprint. God sees it all. You know, maybe in the worldly terms, we don't fit in or whatever, but we're not here to please the world. We're here to please God. He gave each one of us a set of talents. Now, you might, you know, be born with a certain ailment or whatever. Our bodies are broken flesh, and some of us are given a lot better ones than others. I mean, can you imagine? Some people get dropped into, you know, incredible wealth and success and with the most beautiful figure and face in the world, and they grow up playing polo and going to the most expensive schools in the world and flying around the world in private jets. Well, they were kind of lucky, huh? Well, we weren't there. So, you know, and some of us, then other people are given these big knock-kneed bodies with funky hips and, you know, all kinds of medical issues. And you're like, well, how is that fair? I don't know. God knows. But the truth of the matter is when we get to heaven, we get a new body. And I believe that body is going to reflect our heart. Those who are most beautiful on the inside are going to be most beautiful on the outside in heaven. This is temporary. Even though it lasts 70 or 80 years, it's temporary. We're just here to serve him. We're here to know him and make him known. We're here to choose him. Once we know the end game, everything else is simple. I mean, it's not simple. But everything else makes sense. We know where we're going when we're done. We know why we're here. And then we can go to work on one basic goal. If we don't know the end game, we don't know if there's life after death and where we're going afterwards, then we waste our whole time chasing confusing issues and topics and trying to find meaning. I was there. It's hollow. It's empty. You do stupid stuff. You'll try anything. It's so dumb. I was living in insanity. I mean, literally before I came to Christ, I was young, but I had a full life, I'll tell you that. And, you know, that's what the point is. We're here for him, live for him, be for him, trust in him, ask him. Prayer, you know, people say prayer works. Prayer does work, but you got to believe it and you got to mean it. In fact, I'm not even going to say you always have to believe it per se. You got to believe in God. I've seen God answer prayers that I really thought he wouldn't, and I hate to admit that, but it's true. But he heard them. He knows. I mean, he's real. He cares. He's got the great, you know, he wants, Christ says that he came that you may have life and have it abundantly. He wants you to have a good life. That's what he's here for. That's what the whole purpose is. And he gave us a great creation. And once you know the end game, you can accomplish great things. Do you know throughout history in science, the greatest accomplishments, the greatest scientific accomplishments of all throughout history have been done primarily by those of the Christian faith? The overall scientific achievement is landslide dominated by the Christian faith. Christians created science. We get so much twisted theology now, so much twisted history and lies, it's ridiculous. The number one, then you go along a similar line, intellectual accomplishments, the Nobel Peace Prizes and stuff. Like the vast majority of Nobel Prizes have gone to Jews. Why? Because they know God, they read the Bible, they've got the Pentateuch or the Torah, whatever you want to call it, the first five books of the Bible, and they study those vehemently to the point where I believe they develop the brain to a higher level. The Jews have on average an IQ that's 6 points higher than all other nationalities. There is something about our God. There's a lot of amazing things about our God. And the thing that I really have come to really despise the fact that you find out really cool stuff about God and you go to search it online and you get pages of contradiction. That movie, The Principle, about the universe is technically is centered around our solar system. Man, I tried researching that. I get pages and pages of debunked and contradictions. Not even one good hit. Not one good hit to defend it. Google controls information at a pace and level you can't imagine. They scrubbed the web for Obama. The CEO of Google was at the White House 408 times during Obama's presidency. They sat down and said, clean up this, get rid of this, make me look good. Now it's the opposite. Trump is trash to them. I mean, this is sad. I mean, it really is sad. We are in the most vitriolic era that I think has existed, I don't know since when, maybe the Civil War. Folks, today, I'm sure everyone's probably ahead of the curve on this. Basically, there was a shooting, and sorry, I had to do something here real quick. I'll be done in a second. Today there was a shooting. There's a baseball game every year with Republicans and Democrats, okay, our legislators. There's the Republicans on one team, the Democrats on the other. They were in Virginia. They were training, practicing for the game. This game's gone on over 100 years. The Republicans were practicing. A guy shows up, basically says, is this the Democrats or the Republicans practicing? They say the Republicans. He opens fire and starts shooting them. Now, a couple congressional police were there and apparently eventually took the guy down. But the guy got a good, they say, minute plus of shooting. He hit a few people. Scalise, the GOP whip, third in charge of the GOP, they got him. Didn't kill him, whatever. The point is this. This kind of stuff is ridiculous. First of all, the fact that this many federal legislators would get together in a public place with no real security is pathetic. But what's really at the root, folks, the left-wing faction of this nation, the socialistic faction, is over the top. They're creating insane vitriol, hatred, violence, bloodshed. Kathy Griffin with Trump's head with an epitaph, anyway, of Trump's head, decapitated head covered in blood, okay? And that's art. Then we've got in Central Park a play, a 400-year-old Shakespearean play of Julius Caesar, where they literally make Julius Caesar Donald Trump. They do the full garb, they make Julius Caesar completely Donald Trump. And then they do a terrible, violent murder of Donald Trump in the play. They stab him to death, blood, you know, horror, mayhem, the whole nine yards. People are starting to threaten Donald Trump, say that he needs to die. Folks, what is wrong with us? Why is this going on? Who's feeding this trash? Today, Scalise got hit by a bullet. He lived, but he's okay. A left-wing guy comes out and says, one down, 216 to go. Then we've got, people I've been listening to on the TV, they are just pumping ignorant vitriol. They literally believe this trash. They take people like Sessions, or they take people like Trump, and they truly, honestly believe this garbage they're being fed by like MSNBC. The left attacks Fox News, okay? I mean, I'm not the hugest fan of Fox. There's things I can tolerate and things I can't. it does get old that they always have the counterpoint to everything. So you do get to hear both sides. And there's times I would just like the news without someone screaming. Everyone knows who Tucker Carlson is, and he, you know, he's, I'll admit, the guy's pretty good at letting anybody get on there and talk. And there's, sometimes they're just spewing sheer ignorance. And you know, maybe that's good because people get to see the truth. They get to see what these people are really all about. But folks, we are there now. We are creating a radical socialist movement. And that is what this is. This guy who did the shooting is a radical lefty, get this, a Bernie Sanders, not only supporter, but he actually went out and campaigned for Bernie Sanders. Why? He lives in his car. He wants free handouts, okay? He's got issues. The guy was living in his car for months. Well, of course they want a break. I get that. But there are so many other ways. When these people hate God and they hate religion and they hate conservatives, we have never, ever had this level of hatred and division in this nation before that I know of. I mean, I say maybe during the Civil War, maybe, you know, maybe we did, but maybe people knew better than to act out in horrendous violence. I don't know. But I'm telling you, we don't have historical accounts of daily shootings. These, you know, to the point now where people are going after our congressmen. Now, I will say that this, in my opinion, may be kind of a warning from God to those guys. They better be armed. They need security around. Let's face it, that could have been a massacre. There was, I don't know how many, they said like 60 Republicans there. I mean, it could have been a terrible massacre. And, you know, we're there now. This is what we've done with this nation. Are they proud of themselves? And, folks, I really believe that it is coming down to a time where it is a separation between God and man. Do you believe in God or do you believe in man? Because socialism is designed as an anti-God existence. It is all human secularism. You trust in humans alone, pure and simple. The conservative movement at its core is what our Constitution was written to say. We're given certain inalienable rights by our God. They can't be taken away. They're non-debatable. And then we end up with the 10 Bill of Rights, you know, freedom of speech, freedom to bear arms, and so on. Folks, those first two Bill of Rights are the absolute quintessential necessity of a free nation. You've got to have freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press. Now, our press has been hijacked. Everything that is happening in this nation is, well, I don't know about everything. A lot of it is directly affected by socialism, Marxism. I mean, Karl Marx, you know, propaganda, take over the media, take over the schools, do all these things in the Communist Manifesto. And then you get Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. I mean, these things are crazy. And I don't understand it. I grew up in Montana. I've got maybe some old school conservative beliefs where a man takes responsibility for himself and he does right and treats a woman a certain way. But I'm telling you, these kids are coming out of the projects, are coming out of these, you know, welfare homes, are coming out of these handout homes. Even some union jobs are no different than welfare. People just need to show up, and they still get 5-6 weeks a year break for sickness and everything else. They just need to show up for work. They're not really producing squat. That's why we have such a hard time competing internationally, because we're not productive. I'm all for employee rights, and I think it's great if people can make money, but I believe that you got to produce to get paid. And I think that, you know, the Bible says you don't work, you don't eat. That's the welfare of the Bible. Now, everybody, you know, the left, every argument you come up with, or I'm sorry, every sin you call out or every broken aspect you point out, they always use the exception. You say, abortion's out of control, it's wrong. What about the girl, you know, what about the incest rape, okay? Or they, you know, homophobia or homosexuality, you're like, well, what about the people that are born with, you know, whatever, you know, undefinable genitalia or, you know, what about, I mean, it just goes on down the list. It doesn't matter. Those are the exceptions, not the rules. And we've got to focus on the rules. You know, what about the person you say you must work to eat? What about the person who's disabled? Well, I think it's pretty clear in the Bible how we take care of and treat those people. We're responsible for them, duh, okay? So you just take care. You know, I talked a while ago about this argument about what about rape and incest? And, you know, people, I had an email where someone says, I can't believe you said. So here's what I said. I said, if you're debating abortion, and they keep bringing up these little tiny exceptions, say, fine, take those. You can have them. If you're hung up on rape or incest abortions, then just for the sake of argument, let's say, fine, those are okay. Then let's talk about the other 98.5% or 99.5% of abortions that occur. And then all of a sudden you diffuse their argument. Then you start to find out that circumstances don't matter because all of a sudden they start saying, what about the girl that wants to finish her career? Do you know there was I was reading the other day about this Sonia. I can't remember her name. She was an Olympic runner that had an abortion right before the Olympics. And do you know Sonia Richards? So she was a very promising Olympian, and she was going to the 2008 Beijing Olympics. She's a Christian, okay? So here's what happens. She gets pregnant by her fiance. She's engaged to be married. So she's going to the Olympics. America had already invested millions of dollars in this woman. The whole world's looking at her. She's going, she's favored to win. So what does she do? She chooses to have an abortion because it's that baby's going to get in the way of her everything. So she goes to the Olympics and what happens? She fails. She does poor. She says it was clearly because of the guilt of that abortion, just the destructive pain and sorrow and depression she was feeling, knowing what she did wrong. God's powerful. It's hard to know in that situation what, you know, a person's going through. What's even more interesting to me that I do struggle with now and then is the fact she was a Christian, so she couldn't take birth control. She said that at the Olympic Training Center, they said over and over, don't get pregnant. There's free birth control. They have all the birth control they ever wanted right there. And she said she wouldn't use it because she's a Christian and really didn't want to admit she was having sex because she knew she shouldn't. Now, there's the Christian faction that'll say, well, you know, she was sinning and she got the consequences and blah, blah, blah. But the truth is, there's just a tough dilemma there. I mean, frankly, I got married 30 years ago because my girlfriend, who's now my wife, was pregnant. I'm going to be candid with you. Got two beautiful kids, wonderful life, wonderful family. But it was, you know, I was put in a very similar situation. My wife now and I, we'd become believers after we had dated together for years as non-believers. We'd known each other for years. And we struggled with that area, and it was a struggle. We weren't doing well with purity, so we decided to separate for a while. After separating, I found out she was pregnant. She'd become pregnant before we technically broke up. I think we had definitely ended up back together anyway because we were best friends and everything else. But similar position, you know, didn't use birth control and all that stuff because we were Christians and You know, it's just, it's a struggle. And so I can understand this Sonya girl situation. I wouldn't say the abortion's right at all. But just the struggle that she went through is crazy. It's so difficult. And she made a really bad decision. And she was put in one of the great dilemmas you can imagine. She was facing, you know, the potential of being the greatest Olympic athlete, you know, female in all this stuff, or a child. Well, she'd had her whole roadmap figured out. She had her future planned, and she made a real bad decision. But, you know, the point is the fact that, you know, people get in these tough situations. It's hard to walk in those shoes. I can't imagine being in her shoes. Can't even imagine it. But we need to understand humans. I mean, we've all got struggles. She got herself in a heck of a position, you know. But back to the shooting. The shooting, folks, is really another wake-up. We're getting so many of these, and the left is becoming so radicalized. It's scary to me. They're radicalizing their people to become violent. And what's interesting to me is they deflect and divert. And what they do, everything they do, they blame on the right. Now, I've been watching this ridiculous attack on Trump, you know, for this baloney Russian collusion, which doesn't exist. There's no evidence. So first they accuse this, then they interview, and then they say, oh, he's obstructing justice. Folks, let me let you in on a little secret. When he let Comey go, President Trump cannot obstruct justice. Why? Because he is the highest ranked law enforcement official in America. He has every right to fire James Comey. There is no obstruction of justice. He can't do it. He can do whatever he wants when it comes to that. So don't buy those lies either. Don't buy the lies that Trump's this horrible, crazy guy. He's a businessman. He's got a great family. He's doing okay. The media just slaughters. They will not quit. They can't help it. It is the devil. What does the Bible say? The devil comes to steal and kill and destroy. That's what happens to our freedom of press. They are literally the, you know, the left arm of the devil. And they are literally destroying this country. I mean, I know, and what really drives me a little bit nuts that I'm tired of is this, well, both sides do it. They say, well, both sides do it. Both sides do it. No, they actually don't. I think what you find is, you know, you get someone like this who's, I mean, he's an avid Bernie Sanders supporter, full-blown socialism. We've come to a point when somebody like Bernie Sanders can be received. You know, they have what's called the fourth turning. And what it is it's this four-generational cycle that societies go through of foolishness. So what happens is you get a generation that experiences socialism globally. By the way, I keep diverting. Do you know, you want to know about communism and how well it works? Learn about North Korea. Listen to their defectors. They get $5 a month from the government. The bag of rice they need costs $3. They're catching rats. They're eating bugs. They can't live. And then you get Kim Jong-un, who's making weapons and shooting rockets all over the place. You get his, his military men are paid nothing. They're there for free. Folks, these people have nothing to live for. When he wants to talk tough, do you know how fast we could take over that country? They would welcome us with open arms. This garbage where they sent back I can't remember the guy's name. He was captured a few years ago in North Korea as he was heading on a plane because they say he took down a propaganda poster in the hallway of a hotel. So they have a really bad video, as gray and sketchy and foggy as you can imagine, of a person taking it down. No way it's him. I mean, I don't mean that. What I mean is no way to tell it's him. So they string him up. They give him 15 years of hard labor. In the first year, we find him in a coma. When they drug him before the kangaroo courts, when they did the perp walk, he was so sedated, he was just dragging his body, begging for mercy. There isn't an ounce of mercy in that nation, not an ounce of mercy. Sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. Within the first year, he turns up in a coma. Here's what they say. They say, oh, he got botulism from bad food. And then we gave him a sleeping pill, and after that, he was in a coma and never came out. So finally, I believe Dennis Rodman, the ex-NCAA player, NBA, comes out, goes over, visits, and all of a sudden, this guy gets released. The truth of the matter is they didn't want the death of an American on their hands, so they sent him back to us in a severe coma. This is who they are. Communism is trash. It doesn't work. And to this foolish young generation that wants to argue, well, socialism's different than communism. No, communism is just the implementation of socialism. It just doesn't work. So the point of the fourth turning is this. You get a generation that experiences this globally. You look at what Stalin did. You look at what Mao Zedong did. You look at what Hitler did. You look at Mussolini. All these countries failed miserably. People literally starving in the streets, dying, literally eating human flesh to live beyond your wildest dreams. Just terrible. And then, you know, wars break out because these people become tyrannical nuts. And then the generation that fights the war remembers, and then their kids, they hear about it. But then those grandkids, they hear about the war, but they forget what it's about. And then the kids of the grandkids, they don't know much at all. That's the fourth turning. And they go do it all over again. This is how they've eradicated precious metals out of our currency. Everyone knew gold and silver was real money. When they took it away and gave us paper, folks, this inflation thing that you're used to, that's just part of life, and what's the Fed doing with interest rates and all that, that never existed. Do you realize from the creation of the U.S. Coinage Act in 1792 until the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, the dollar, the U.S. dollar strengthened fivefold. So what cost a nickel in 1792 was a penny in 1913. The dollar had gone up fivefold in buying power. Since the implementation of the Fed, the dollar has lost over 99.5% of its spending power. Hard to believe, right? It is unbelievable. A Cuban cigar in 1913 was a nickel. A Cuban cigar today is like 15 to 20 bucks. You talk about real estate, $700 to $1,300 for a home, $300,000 now. You know, we know about, $400, $350 Ford car that now is $50,000 or whatever, $40,000, $50,000, a lot. This is what inflation's done. How do you save money for that? You don't. You die broke. Now, precious metals, luckily, God created them as true wealth, hard assets. They go up and up and up and up. They hold their value. There's only two things that affect their value. One is actual inflation, which is good because they follow that. However, they have been artificially suppressed. So when they open up, they outperform everything. They outperform inflation and everything. Because they're suppressed at times like these, they're just a loaded gun ready to run. The only other thing that affects their value is physical theft, loss of ownership. That's what makes them good and what makes them bad. The fact is they're anonymous. They're transportable. They're immediately liquid. They're recognizable everywhere at every time. They are true wealth. So many of you, you don't even understand what I'm saying. You can't even comprehend it. People ask me, well, if I get that stuff, how do I turn it back to dollars? I've literally had a guy say, when the dollar collapses, how do I turn my metals back into dollars to buy stuff? And I'm like, listen to yourself. I've actually had more than one person ask that. You're telling me when the dollar's worthless, you want to turn your money back into dollars? Have you ever watched the Weimar Republic come apart at the seams? It was quite unsightly. People would dump out a wheelbarrow full of cash and take the wheelbarrow. And that's the truth. And that's what hyperinflation does. And we're going there. Be ready. When it hits, you ain't stopping it. All it takes, China dumps their bonds and says, we're done with you. Because we start to get a little friction with them, it's over. We owe $1 trillion in debt. People say, well, just don't pay them. That'll teach them a lesson. No, they'll try to redeem the bonds, and they will literally destroy the U.S. dollar forever, instantly. It doesn't work that way when you get to those big numbers and bonds. So anyway, folks, we have a solution. We help you preserve and protect your capital. That's what we do biblically. God made a system. God did it all. God created wealth and money, and he gave us a system to resolve that. Hard assets, precious metals-based assets. We do it. This is what we do. We're knowledgeable. We build good portfolios. You just come in. We'll give you great stuff. You want to just tuck it away and sit on it, let it grow, pull it out in 20 years, hand it to the kids, whatever. There's nothing that will outperform it. I assure you that. You cannot believe how poorly paper performs over time. Sure, you might get lucky and get the Wonder Stock, and that's all that keeps you driving is the greed of hoping to get rich on a Wonder Stock. Isn't going to happen, folks. Sure, brokers will deceive the heck out of you, but when it comes right down to it, you're going to lose all your money, and they're going to sit there and act like it's your fault. I've been around this block way too long, decades. Never changes, no matter where the market is. So Coins Plus, 444-0044, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN. I was going to talk about reverse mortgages today, and I forgot. But give us a call, folks. And by the way, reverse mortgages are not a good choice. We'll be back Friday. God bless. Bye-bye.